Could you talk about how important was and is the land and agriculture to the Pueblos?
Well, you know, the people maintained the landscape for biodiversity. It wasn't just for the domesticated crops, like I stated earlier, it's for everything around us, which enabled the people to cope with shifts in the frequency and magnitude of the environmental variables, you know, that defines the limit of production out here. When the Spanish first came here, it's chronicled in the Journey of Coronado, 1540 to 1542. And it states that the Rio Grande Valley was naturally a Garden of Eden. And it says, so fertile that they do not have to break up the ground year-round, but only have to sow the seed. And in the memorial of Fray Alonso de Benavides of 1630, the Spaniard expressed amazement that the people harvested very good crops from the stubble of the year before without giving it any other working than a little irrigating. And so they were really excellent land managers. And they knew about diversity, they knew about the soil horizons, they knew about groundwater and how it's recharged by surface water. They knew about biology, and that's their key to the survival here.
And I also wanted to ask about how the land here has been affected by the ongoing development of Santa Fe and surrounding areas, because that's also something that I want to address in my program.
Well, we have a major highway bisecting the reserve, no? And that's the cause of our number two air pollution problem, which is carbon monoxide. And then we have encroachment around the exterior boundaries of the reserve. And most of these people are putting in wells. And if you look at a map of this area, there's hundreds of homes, each one with a straw going into the aquifer, each one drawing X amount of water. And so it's impacting us on those terms. And then when they build these homes, they're destroying centuries-old land management structures on the ground. And so when they destroy these structures by building roads and putting in their homes on these mesas or on these slopes, you know, there's no more recharge. There's more head cutting, which forms the arroyos. All that sediment comes down and impacts the river riparian habitat, which kills off your fish population. With these homes, you're looking at the basically kind of the devegetation or deforestation of the area, and also the importation of exotics. And you know, just by coming down the Rio Grande, you're seeing all the real tamarisk and the Russian olives, and how it's impacting the riparian systems. And just like with GE contamination, it's going to spread. You know, now they're talking about letting GE evergreen trees to pollinate and see how they react, but there's already studies found that grass and alfalfa pollens are escaping. And hopefully people will find out about it and oppose Apostates. With all this vegetation, I mean, with all this development, there's less vegetation, which means no biodiversity. Probably you're looking at the reserve as just being the only green zone, probably within 20 years, an open space. So that's kind of how it's impacting us here. Also, irrigation. You know, I have people upstream from me. However, I mean, we have a good working relationship, so that in case, well, in the past where we've had no water, we've kind of declared our priority to use the water.
And I had a question. But, you know, how big of an issue has water been? And does all of the, I mean, because you kind of mentioned that when there wasn't much water, you had to declare a priority. And, you know, what does it mean for the farmers here?
Well, we need to get away from the Western idea of farming techniques, and get back to the traditional mythologies. You know, now farming is looking upon the no-till method, which is basically what our ancestors were doing. With more diversity, you have less evaporation. You look at the soil horizons, and the main people, the soil people, the mycelium. If you look out in the fields now with the methods that we use, we're destroying the soil horizons plus the soil people. And so these mycelial mats, which are all through here, they're the ones that hold the water. So they're the missing link. And if we start growing the mycelium and the plants and the biodiversity, and it'll be better for us in the long term. You know, I plant my fields. You look around here, and people, and then further down upstream, you know, my friends come over and they say, "Aren't you gonna cultivate? Aren't you gonna weed? Take your weeds out?" And I look out and I say, "What weeds? You know, I can use that plant for this or that plant for that." And so, what are you talking about, weeds? You know, and so we have to get away from the way of that way of thinking also, and relearn what all these plants are and their uses, because they're very beneficial plants, not only for medicine and material, but for and food.
Do you have any suggestion on how people can learn about that? I mean, because, you know, people come in from California or wherever people come in from, and you know, dandelions, they have to poison the dandelions, or they have to poison this or that, and those are good, I mean, that's food, right? And so, do you have any suggestion on how people can learn more about what they can do? Because,
well, more information, you know, is going out to the public as to what's here. And what is food? And there's actually programs within the local school systems that are teaching the kids about alternative food source systems. And, it's gonna be a hard process. However, you know, that's the way to go. And there's lots of people out there that grew up that way. And now they're being sought out. And learn from those individuals how they were able to sustain themselves, you know, out here in the country. And, without depleting finite resources, you know, just living with what's here. The more people are aware of what's going on in the world and how they're impacting what they're doing, well, I think that's the change. And for the younger generation, you know, they want to have a future. And so they themselves are making that change.
So I had, you know, I had specific water questions, but you kind of answered those with, if there's anything else you want to say about that. And I'd kind of, you know, I'd asked what the land gives the people. Kind of talked about that a little bit, but if you want to say more.
Okay. Well, in Indian country, you hear that the land is sacred to us. And, so we're sitting here in Tisuki. This whole Tisuki Valley floor, river valley floor, is the floor of my church. One wall is the Sangre de Cristos on the east side there, and then the Jemez Mountain Range over here on the west. Yeah. So when I'm facing north, where you came from, I have one of those mountains as my altar. When I'm facing south, I have one of the peaks in the south as my altar. And the paintings in my church, you can hear the music. They change every second. I can go anywhere in my church here, and it's a special place. And I can feel the sun's rays. And I'm connected to everything out here. And they're all my relations out here. The birds, the plants, the bees. And that's what it means to the Indian people. That's what it means to me. And we treat Earth Mom with respect.